I will get to that maybe a little bit later on, but I'm more into getting to this right now. We are joined by a combat sports writer for Yahoo Sports. Kevin Ioli is my guest. Kevin, it's great to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Always good to have you on, Kevin. Lots to cover. So let me start with today's weigh-in ahead of tomorrow night's UFC 226 card and the fact that Stipe weighed in at 242.5. Daniel Cormier, Kevin, weighed in at 246. What do you make of the light heavyweight champion of the world weighing in at more than the heavyweight champion of the world?
I think the thing that struck me the most about that was the fact that how much weight Daniel Cormier is cutting to get to 205 and defend his title at light heavyweight when he does that. I mean, an insane amount of weight. But Daniel kind of hinted yesterday, somebody had asked him a question at the press conference about him giving up 20 pounds to Stipe, and he said, what? And so, you know, we kind of had an idea that he was not going to come in light.
All right, so he fell also yesterday at the media session, and there were reports that the leg had swelled up a bit. From what you've seen of him since that fall, how does he look, and do you think that's going to be any factor at all for Cormier?
No, I don't think, Jim. I don't think it's an issue. He kind of was limping around when it first happened. There were speakers behind him, and he took a step back, and he tripped over them, and he banged his shin and calf hit when he landed. And he was kind of limping around, and it could have been a lot worse than it turned out to be, you know, because he could have hit his head. But he's fine. He's walking totally fine, no side effects. So he should not be hurt in any way in the fight.
Good. Excellent. Kevin Ioli, my guest. Now, Kevin, Cormier made his UFC debut as a heavyweight, and he looked really, really good. But then he went to light heavyweight because he and Cain Velasquez did not want to be in the same division. So how different do you think Cormier will be as a heavyweight than he's been as a light heavyweight? And does he have advantages that will be even more pronounced against Stipe than against light heavyweights?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that say this, and Cormier brought it up yesterday, but that at light heavyweight, the athletes are a little bit better because they're faster, they're more explosive, you know, they're more at a natural weight. You know, you get these heavyweights and they get up to, you know, 265, 270, and then they're cutting down, you know, so, you know, Francis Ngannou's 253, he's probably weighing 275, 280 between, you know, and so you're cutting down to get to that. So those athletes are better at 205. So there's some thought that, you know, you're facing tougher opposition at light heavyweight than you are at heavyweight. Now, that doesn't include Stipe Miocic, who is one of the great athletes in the world. I mean, this guy can do everything. You know, I think one of the most memorable things of his title reign is in 2016, after he beat Fabricio Werdum, he goes home to Cleveland. The Indians invite him out to batting practice, and he hits a home run over the left field wall at Progressive Field. I mean, it just shows the kind of athletic ability this guy has.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. All right, so if he's that much, and by the way, he might be the greatest heavyweight in UFC history. If you're Stipe, what concerns you the most about Cormier?
His wrestling ability. I mean, Daniel is an Olympic level wrestler, and while Stipe was a terrific college wrestler, the highest he was ranked was 17, and his MMA wrestling I think is better than his college wrestling. But you know, Daniel has the ability to get him down, and Daniel's a great grappler. You know, I think clearly Stipe is going to have the advantage on the feet. He's got a big reach. He's got a big height advantage. He was a Golden Gloves boxer. He lost in the national tournament to Brian Jennings, who fought for the boxing heavyweight title against Klitschko. So he's a guy that, you know, is a very good boxer. You know, Daniel is a good striker, but not a great striker. But his wrestling. So I think what Stipe would have to worry about is, you know, being taken down and kind of mauled on the ground.
All right, so Kevin, I talked to Daniel yesterday, and we, of course, talked about the fact that styles make fights and that their styles actually on some level are pretty similar. How do you see this fight going?
Well, I think it's going to be a very simple fight. I think Stipe is going to want to create angles and try to load up to throw that right hand and hit Daniel with something and hurt him. I think Daniel is going to want to make sure that he moves away from that, you know, that right hand and shoot in a takedown. I mean, I think Daniel has to mix things up a lot more than Stipe is going to do, because he's got to create that moment of indecision where Stipe doesn't know, is he going to throw a punch or is he going to shoot on me? And I think that's the key thing for Daniel. But I think, you know, it's going to be a very tactical fight, but they're going to be both winging bombs at each other. And the key is going to be, can Daniel get in deep and get that takedown? Can he double leg him? Can he get him to the ground and put him on his back? And if he can repeatedly do that early in the fight, then I think that changes the entire dramatic of the fight the rest of the way, because it's going to force Stipe to change the way he approaches Daniel.
I love that matchup. Kevin Ioli joining us. All right, Kevin, yesterday also brought the news that Max Holloway had to pull out of UFC 226 because of concussion-like symptoms. That featherweight title fight against challenger Brian Ortega had a lot of buzz around it. So how disappointed are you, purely as a fan, not to have that fight?
Oh, I mean, hugely disappointed. You're talking two of the best fighters in the world. I mean, any weight class, Ortega and Holloway, are tremendous fighters. And that fight was going to be spectacular. I think that would have been the best fight on the card. Fortunately, this is one of those cards where top to bottom, it was a sensational fight. They on the main card, they replaced Ortega and Holloway with Paul Felder and Mike Perry. That fight could have been on the main card to begin with. I mean, that's how good of a fight that was. But it's really sad. And, you know, I had an interview with Dana White last night, Jim, and one of the things he said about Max is there's some evidence that it's concussion related. There's some evidence that it was weight cut related. But he said there's also a thought that maybe Max had water intoxication. And so he discussed that a little bit, and that's a very serious issue too. So they're still doing tests on Max to try to figure out exactly what's going on.
Well, that's really interesting. And since you spoke to Dana White, what was your sense of his take on Ortega's decision not to take a replacement fight?
Well, I'll tell you this. I had an appointment to talk to Dana, and I was waiting at the Palms to talk to him, and I waited about an hour because Brian Ortega showed up and went in and they talked. And so I got a chance to ask Dana right afterwards, and he thought it was a mistake by Brian. He thought, you know, hey, you don't get a lot of opportunities, and it would have been a championship fight, and Brian would have had the belt had he beaten Jeremy Stephens. And, you know, that has always been Dana's philosophy. I hit him with, I said, let's play the devil's advocate. What does losing this fight hurt the show? You're still got a great show, Lewis and Ngannou in the co-main event, the heavyweight title fight everybody's buzzing about. It's a deep card. There's a lot of good fights on the card. And this, there was nothing to gain by Brian fighting Jeremy, because, you know, I wrote a piece earlier in the year saying how much improved Jeremy was and how dangerous he had become. He's a big dude. There's a chance he might not have made weight. And even if he made weight, you know, he was going to have a decided size advantage. He's got a totally different style. How does that benefit Brian on 48 hours notice to now have to, everything he prepared for in camp kind of change his footwork, change his thought process? To me, I think it was just a tough ask.
Kevin Ioli joining us. Kevin, before you go, I really want to ask you about Ronda Rousey, because she was inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame yesterday. You've covered the fight game for a long, long time. Have you ever seen anybody with a career arc like the one Ronda had in the cage? I mean, that absolutely amazing rise and then the subsequent incredible fall.
It's totally stunning, and I've never seen that before. You always see signs in people, hey, they're starting to slow down, and even when they win, you know, they're not winning as impressively, and there's signs they're getting hit more. Ronda, you know, you think her last three fights, she won, what was it, 16 seconds against Alexis Davis, 14 seconds against Katsun Gano, and then a minute and a half against Betch Kohea, and it's like she's at the top of her game, and then she gets routed by Holly Holm. She gets routed even worse by Amanda Nunes. I've never seen it before. I actually spent quite a bit of time talking to Dana about that yesterday, and if he could put his finger on it. And the only thing he offered for her was, you know, she got so big celebrity-wise that was really hurting her. But it was amazing how she kind of fell off the face of the earth. I mean, it was just, you know, this great fighter, untouchable fighter, and then all of a sudden, you know, she was a punching bag. It was amazing.
I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, like you said, you put it to Dana, and Dana said maybe it's because of the celebrity and she lost focus. But, I mean, how do you explain that fall and the fact that she simply could not come back from it?
You know what I think is, like, if I picked Ronda to beat Holly Holm, so I don't want to, you know, sit here and now say I thought Holly was going to win. But I told people when I was asked before that, they said, make a case for Holly. I said, well, if you look at Ronda's fight with Sarah McMahon, Sarah McMahon is a wrestler, not noted as a striker. And she hit Ronda with a number of clean shots, but Ronda was able to take the shots, get into the clinch, and finish the fight quickly. And I think the thought process was going to be against Holly that that's what would happen. Holly had the better striking, but Ronda would close the distance, eat a punch or two, get in the clinch, and either armbar or do something to finish the fight. And I think once she got hit and wasn't able to close the distance, I think she lost confidence. I mean, what you saw in the Amanda Nunes fight with Ronda Rousey was a fighter who had no confidence in her abilities. And that was the antithesis of what Ronda had been throughout her career, as she oozed confidence and she believed that she could beat anybody. You remember famously when she said, somebody asked her if she thought she could beat Cain Velasquez, and she said, "I'll never say I can't do anything."
No, exactly right, Kevin. And I also think that, I mean, Amanda was one, I mean, I should say Ronda was one of those people, like, where she had that confidence where she had beaten opponents before they even got in the cage with her, the way Mike Tyson did way back in the day. But it's one thing to lose to Holly Holm, but then she came back against Amanda Nunes a year later and actually looked worse. How do you explain that? Was it just that her confidence was gone or something else?
I think the confidence was mostly it, but I think, you know, her camp never... You know, they were like, I remember her camp for Betch Kohei and talking to Edmund, her trainer, Edmund Tverdian. And he was telling me, oh, she's beating the crap out of world champion boxers. And I said, well, who are these boxers? And it turned out they were like, you know, not world champion. They were 5-0 and 6-0 boxers. And, you know, I don't think that they ever really turned Ronda into a striker. And so her grappling was so good that she overcame her striking deficiencies. And like you said, it was very well documented in her career. She intimidated people and they were so worried about the armbar that, you know, they couldn't perform themselves. And I think, you know, Holly gave a game plan. Amanda then believed, you know, Amanda told everybody before what she was going to do, and then she went out and did it. And I think Ronda did not have the confidence in herself, and I think it was she was never developed as a striker, and so she never added to her skills in that department. And when she went in against a woman who was one of the best strikers in the world, she realized, I think, that she was short and didn't have any other bullets in the gun to fire.
Right. Kevin Ioli, my guest. Kevin, one last thought, and maybe it's a reach, and I'm not even saying that I'm making this reach, but I'll pose it as a question. Then you've got Conor McGregor, right? And, like, for instance, Ronda went from living in her car to being the face of the sport and a gigantic celebrity. Conor went from being a plumber's apprentice to also being the face of the sport and a gigantic celebrity. Now, when he met with adversity in the cage, he bounced right back. But is there a chance that this thing could completely spin out of control from Conor and that we don't see him again? And much like Ronda, maybe he's never anywhere near what he used to be and, in fact, have a great fall from grace himself?
I think Conor lives to fight. Now, I question whether he will fight again. But if he does, Jim, I believe he will be successful. Not to say he's going to win every fight he takes. You know, I think a fight with Khabib is going to be a very difficult matchup for him. But I think, you know, that you're not going to see him get beaten the way Ronda did in her last two fights and then go away. But I still question, because I know Dee Devlin, his significant other, the mother of his child, does not like him fighting. And now the guy's got over $100 million in the bank. He was fourth on the Forbes list this year. He was eighth last year, even before the Mayweather fight, for highest earners. He's got a ton of money in the bank. He doesn't need to do it. And your motivation is a lot different when you don't need to do it. And so I question whether he'll get in, because he understands the fight game so well. And I think he's so astute. He'll see what happened to Ronda. And if he realizes if his intensity is not there and his desire is not there, he's not going to fight. And my guess would be still that I don't think he fights.
So one last thought. If he does, though, if he fights Khabib, how do you think that would go?
I would favor Khabib in the fight. I would not say it would be a slam dunk win for Khabib, but I think Khabib's grappling is too good. I mean, you know, he's got elite level wrestling, very, very high level wrestling to get Conor to the ground. You know, certainly Al Iaquinta showed that, you know, Khabib has some work to do on the feet, and Conor is a great striker and has great kicks. But, you know, you would think that the kicks would be difficult against somebody like Khabib because the threat of a takedown. If you try a kick and he catches that kick, you're in big trouble. And so I think, you know, I would favor Khabib to get a submission in the fight. But I would not discount Conor, but I would definitely favor Khabib.
A combat sports writer for Yahoo Sports, one of the best in the business and covering a whole lot of ground. Kevin Ioli, my guest. Kevin, great job as always. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Appreciate it, Jim. Thanks for calling. See you.
Always like talking to you, Kevin. Covered a lot of ground there.